Catch Your Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome to The Deep Dive, the show where we really try to unearth the most compelling ideas and insights from the world's best sources, all just for you. Today, we're diving into a truly fascinating concept, one that fundamentally reshapes, well, our understanding of ourselves and our very planet. Our source material for this journey is Diane Ackerman's really insightful book, The Human Age, The World Shaped by Us. Just imagine this for a second. What if humanity isn't just, you know, living on Earth? What if we're now so powerful that we're actively shaping its geology, its climate, even the course of evolution itself? That's the profound, sometimes, yeah, startling question we're unpacking today. It's kind of like realizing we've graduated from being passengers on this grand journey to actually being the main architects of the ship.
Exactly. And our mission today is to explore the far-reaching implications of us entering what scientists are calling the Anthropocene, or as Ackerman so eloquently puts it, the human age. This isn't just a scientific term. It's really a new reality where our species' influence has become the dominant force on Earth. It's a story filled with challenges, yes, absolutely, but also one that reveals this unparalleled level of responsibility and, maybe surprisingly, immense opportunity for us to redefine our place, our role.
Okay, let's unpack this. Get ready for some, I think, pretty powerful shifts in perspective as we look at how we've genuinely become planetary architects.
And to guide us through this intricate landscape, Diane Ackerman is truly a unique voice. She's a best-selling author, sure, but also a trained naturalist with a PhD in English. Her background is wonderfully interdisciplinary. It spans natural history, psychology, literature. It allows her to bring this, well, uncommon breadth of understanding to really complex subjects.
That blend is incredibly valuable, isn't it? Her scientific rigor, that deep understanding of the natural world, it's just seamlessly paired with this remarkable literary eloquence.
Mm-hmm.
It means she can weave together cutting-edge scientific research with prose that's so rich and vivid that these often overwhelming complex topics become, well, not just accessible, but genuinely beautiful, profoundly engaging.
Yeah, you don't just get the facts.
No. You feel the weight and the wonder of them.
And what makes her perspective particularly distinctive is her approach. She's not an alarmist, not really. Instead, she comes at this as a deeply curious observer, someone who finds both immense beauty and a compelling urgency in our world, which has already been so dramatically transformed. Her poet sensitivity, you know, to language and metaphor lets her capture both the wonder and the magnitude of our moment. But her naturalist's eye ensures scientific accuracy. She helps us understand the nuance, moving beyond just the headlines to something more complex.
Right. Okay, here's where it really gets interesting. The book's central thesis is a powerful one. Humanity has transitioned from simply living within nature to becoming the planet's single most dominant geological and ecological force.
Mm.
We're not just part of nature anymore. Our collective activity is now a force comparable to, say, past ice ages or massive volcanic eruptions. We are, quite literally, a force of nature ourselves.
And this monumental shift is why scientists have formally termed this new geological epoch the Anthropocene, literally the age of humans. Ackerman emphasizes, though, this isn't solely a narrative of crisis. It's complex, often paradoxical, this new reality we have to face. I mean, consider these statistics she highlights. Humans and our livestock now constitute an astounding 97% of the planet's terrestrial vertebrate biomass.
97%. Wow.
Think about that. It's not just a number. It's a stark illustration. The vast wild animal kingdom we often romanticize, it's now dwarfed by us and the species we control.
That completely redefines how you think about nature as something separate from us.
Exactly. It shows it is now largely of us.
Yeah.
And furthermore, we annually move more earth and rock than all natural processes combined.
Every year.
Every year. Our impact isn't just visible, it's literally being etched into the Earth's geology for future epochs to find.
That statistic about biomass, that's quite a shift in perspective, isn't it? It truly makes you reconsider what wild even means anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the core insight Ackerman gives us is that while our activity has, without question, created significant environmental challenges, our ingenuity and adaptability also offer equally extraordinary opportunities for solutions.
Right. It challenges us to embrace our role, there's that word again, role as planetary stewards with an entirely new level of consciousness and responsibility. This isn't just about managing problems, it's about consciously guiding a future we are actively creating.
So it's about acknowledging our power, our impact.
Indeed. It means recognizing that our human signature is now embedded everywhere. The astonishing discovery of plastic deposits forming a new kind of rock in ocean sediments.
Plastic rock.
Yeah, plastiglomerate, they call it. To the dramatic and well-documented changes in atmospheric chemistry. Ackerman pinpoints what she calls the Great Acceleration, that period since about 1950, when human impact on planetary systems just surged dramatically. This surge isn't just a trend. It's establishing this era as a transition as significant as any in Earth's deep history.
And it's not just geology and atmosphere, it's life itself. Ackerman delves deep into what she calls Nature 2.0, redesigning life itself, exploring the increasingly blurred lines between what we've traditionally called natural and what's artificial.
Nature 2.0 isn't just a metaphor, is it?
No, it's her term for this planetary era, where the traditional boundary between nature and human intervention has basically dissolved.
Mm.
It signifies that our world, even its wildest corners, is increasingly a product of human design, whether accidental or intentional.
Mm.
On one hand, you have groundbreaking work like that of J. Craig Venter. He and his team aren't just manipulating existing life, they're creating synthetic life forms from scratch.
Right, designing bacteria to produce biofuels or even maybe to eat plastic waste.
Exactly. The sheer audacity of designing life at its fundamental level.
Yeah.
It's groundbreaking. Opens up incredible possibilities, but also sparks these really profound discussions about our role as creators.
And the ethics around that, of course.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Then there's the ambitious concept of de-extinction and assisted migration. Think about the incredible Pleistocene Park project in Siberia. The goal is to resurrect woolly mammoths and effectively recreate an ice age ecosystem.
Wow. Talk about ambitious goals.
Right. Or the more immediate and increasingly necessary practice of actively moving species to new habitats to help them survive climate change.
Assisted migration, yeah. That's happening now.
It's proactive, sometimes controversial conservation, essentially playing evolutionary matchmaker.
But it's not all quite so world-altering, is it? There's also biomimicry.
Yes. On a more universally positive note, we see biomimicry thriving. This is where we learn from nature's 3.8 billion years of R&D.
Like learning from the best.
Totally. For instance, the unique shell of the Namib Desert Beetle has inspired tech for harvesting water from fog, and the kingfisher's perfectly aerodynamic beak that provided the design for Japan's bullet trains, solving noise and efficiency problems.
Amazing. It's the ultimate collaboration, letting nature be our most brilliant design consultant.
Exactly.
So from redesigning life at its cellular level, we move pretty seamlessly to the urban animal cities as the new wilderness. Ackerman redefines cities not as, you know, sterile concrete jungles, but as vibrant, evolving ecosystems, teeming with a new kind of natural history.
That's a cool way to put it.
Isn't it? She brings forward compelling evidence of urban wildlife adaptation. We see peregrine falcons not just nesting, but thriving on skyscrapers. Coyotes establishing territories in suburban areas.
You hear about that all the time now.
Yeah, and even London's underground mosquitoes evolving into a new distinct species perfectly adapted to that subterranean world.
A whole new species.
Yeah.
Just down there.
Apparently so. And urban birds are even changing their songs, altering pitch and rhythm to be heard over traffic noise. It's like evolution in real time, right outside our windows.
That is astonishing.
And this leads directly into the concept of green urbanism. It's about consciously reintegrating nature into our built environments.
Making cities part of the solution, not just the problem.
Precisely. Think about vertical farming. Growing crops in stacked layers inside buildings, dramatically cutting land and water use, or green roofs that insulate, manage stormwater, and provide these little mini habitats.
Yeah, I've seen those becoming more popular.
We're even designing wildlife corridors within cities to allow animals to move safely through urban landscapes, creating pathways for biodiversity. Cities are becoming these fascinating labs for a new, more integrated human-nature interaction, where concrete and biodiversity aren't mutually exclusive.
Okay, and then we tackle the really monumental stuff.
Yeah.
Engineering the elements, taming the planet's systems. This is where our audacity, maybe our hubris sometimes, truly shines. Mm. We're talking about geoengineering.
Right, the big interventions.
Yeah. Proposals ranging from spraying sulfate aerosols into the stratosphere, like mimicking a volcanic eruption to reflect sunlight, to even launching giant mirrors into space to dim the sun.
These ideas offer a glimmer of hope, maybe, as emergency measures.
Maybe. but they also come with this profound fear of unpredictable, potentially catastrophic side effects.
Absolutely. The specific fears around sulfate aerosols, for instance.
Yep.
It's not just about dimming the sun. It's the potential to disrupt global rainfall patterns.
Causing droughts here, floods there.
Exactly. Or the moral hazard, you know. Creating a reliance on a technology we can't easily undo. It's a testament to our power, but also to the immense unknowns that come with it.
At the same time, our efforts to harness energy are equally monumental. Mm-hmm. Ackerman discusses visiting these vast solar farms stretching for miles across deserts, fundamentally reshaping landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
She also highlights the complex engineering of offshore wind turbines, standing like sentinels out in the ocean.
These aren't just power plants, are they?
No, they're colossal acts of planetary reshaping, dedicating immense tracts of land and sea to human-engineered power, all aimed at transitioning us away from fossil fuels. It truly underscores our new role, our active role as managers of Earth's fundamental systems, for better or worse.
What's truly fascinating here, though, is that the very qualities that brought us to this point, our boundless creativity, our remarkable adaptability, our relentless capacity for innovation, these are precisely our greatest tools for navigating the future we've already set in motion. It's about channeling that ingenuity with intention and responsibility.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit. Let's highlight some of the core themes from Ackerman's work that really shift our perspective. First, there's the simple but profound idea of humanity as a dominant geological force. We just have to accept our power, not deny it.
That acceptance is key.
Then she brilliantly points out the duality of human ingenuity. Our cleverness often causes problems, sure, but it also provides the solutions. It's this double-edged sword we have to learn to wield with greater wisdom.
But is there a risk there? That focusing too much on ingenuity might sort of downplay the need for fundamental behavioral shifts or lead to an over-reliance on tech fixes?
That's a crucial question. And I think Ackerman would argue it's not either, right? It's about careful integration.
Okay. Another key theme, the collapse of the natural artificial divide. There's no more truly pristine wilderness in that old romanticized sense. We're engaging with a hybrid world where our influence is woven into almost every ecosystem.
Yeah, that requires a shift in thinking.
And this leads directly to stewardship over nostalgia. We can't go back to some imagined pure past. So our task, our goal, is to become wise planetary managers, focusing on foresight and empathy as we actively shape the future rather than just longing for a past that's gone.
Wise planetary managers. That's a big role to step into.
It is. And finally, Ackerman never lets us forget the enduring power of awe and wonder. She argues that awe for the world, both the old natural world and the new things we're creating, is a vital ingredient for motivation and responsible action. It's the emotional fuel that reminds us what we're protecting and why.
Hmm. If we connect this to the bigger picture, then, it's really about moving from being passive inhabitants of Earth,
right,
to active, conscious, deliberate participants in its ongoing evolution. It's a huge psychological shift. Requires us to understand our power and embrace our role as truly co-creators of this planet.
And Ackerman has some truly potent ideas that just linger in your mind long after you read them. She says, we are dreaming vivid new dreams of Earth, which just beautifully captures the need to completely reimagine our relationship with the planet, not just patch up old problems.
I like that. Vivid new dreams.
Yeah. Another powerful one. The same marvelous ingenuity that got us into this mess can get us out of it. That's such an optimistic take on human agency, highlighting our incredible capacity for solving problems, which, let's face it, often gets forgotten when we feel overwhelmed.
It's easy to forget that ingenuity. She also observes, we're not witnessing the end of nature, but its transformation into something entirely new. That offers a far more constructive view of change, doesn't it? Acknowledging that nature adapts and evolves, often with us, as a powerful, sometimes overwhelming catalyst.
Mm-hmm. It reframes the narrative.
And finally, awe is the vital ingredient. It is what reminds us that the world is bigger than our own needs, more complex than our own understanding. It is the beginning of respect. That, to me, is the emotional fuel for true stewardship. It reminds us that even in an age of human dominance, wonder is our guiding light.
Absolutely. And this raises an important question then. How can you, listening right now, apply these powerful ideas in your own life? Ackerman's work offers more than just grand concepts. It really gives us a framework for meaningful action.
It really does. So here are a few concrete real-life applications for you to consider. First, adopt a steward's mindset. Every choice you make, from recycling and what you buy to how you vote, can be seen as an act of gardening the planet. It fosters a sense of agency rather than helplessness.
Little acts of gardening the planet, I like that.
Second, rethink nature. You don't have to go to a national park to find it. Appreciate the urban wilderness, the birds nesting on traffic lights, the plants pushing through cracks in the pavement, the surprising resilience of life in cities.
Makes you look at city pigeons with new respect, doesn't it?
Exactly. They're often frontline pioneers of nature 2.0.
Okay, what else?
Third, become critically tech optimistic. Support genuine solutions like renewable energy, sustainable agriculture tech, but also remain vigilant about potential unintended consequences, especially in areas like geoengineering or genetic engineering. Ask the hard questions. Demand transparency.
So optimism tempered with critical thinking.
Precisely. And finally, cultivate awe as a practice. Actively seek out wonder in both the natural and the human-made world around you, whether it's stargazing, marveling at a new biological discovery, or just appreciating the intricate design of a flower. Cultivating awe builds resilience. It builds motivation for responsible action.
So the core lesson from the human age is profoundly clear, I think. We have fundamentally altered the planet. And our future hinges entirely on how wisely, how ethically, how intelligently we wield this immense power. It's about becoming conscious, deliberate, and hopefully wise managers of our co-created home, acknowledging our extraordinary capabilities for both creation and, well, consequence.
Which leads to a final thought.
Yes.
What if embracing our role as planetary architects with all its complexities and responsibilities is not just our greatest challenge? What if it's also our greatest opportunity for wonder, for collective creation, and for defining a truly new age for humanity and Earth? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.